This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning. For those on the call, this is the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee meeting. As a reminder, this is a public meeting. And for those on the phone, please mute your lines when you're not speaking to eliminate any background noise. And also, please don't put the call on hold. I'm going to, before we get started, I'll take a quick roll call. Judge Austin, here. Judge Bremer. Ms. Cameron?
Here.
Ms. Carter?
Here.
Judge Heinrich? Ms. Junior?
She's here if you just stepped out for a second.
Okay. Mr. Kim?
He will try to call
me. On the phone. Yes. Mr. Kim, are you on the phone? Judge Nakamura?
Here.
Mr. Planet?
Here.
Judge Rick?
Here.
Judge Rockwell?
Here.
She's here.
Here. I'll take her first.
Great.
Her.
Ms. Sloan? Ms. Turner?
Here.
And Judge Wong?
Here.
Okay, great. That is the roll call. I will turn it over to Oxney to get us started.
All right, we have, first, we have approval of the minutes. We've got two meetings where we haven't had a chance to approve the minutes, so I'm calling for a motion to approve the May 29th and July 29th minutes together in case if someone wants to separate them out, we have it if we can. Is there a motion?
I move approval.
Second.
Any discussion on either the May 29th or the July 29th minutes that are attached? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, from my understanding today, there is no in-person public comment, so we will move on. We should acknowledge we have a written public comment.
Right.
It's been distributed to the members already.
We have a written public comment that we distributed to all of you, which you could pick up when you got it. And we have another written public comment we got from Judge Heinrich, which we will discuss. We're happy to put that in an email this morning. So we're here because when we kind of talked about this on the 29th, when we were at the council meeting, there was some concern that we didn't have enough time to fully analyze everything, and they asked us if we wanted some additional time, which I agreed that we needed at their request. So we are specifically looking at the case rate to make sure that it's representative of the that it reflects the best number of to ask for additional judges that we're not meeting smaller courts or larger courts and we're considering the best number. I'll kind of leave it at that. And we will over so we can get right to the heart of it.
Great. And, you know, before we get started, Judge, I'm just going to ask that we have proposed to join on the phone line. Are any of them? If any committee members have not, feel free to acknowledge on the roll call.
Yes, Bonnie Sloan from Yuba County on the phone.
Thank you, Ms. Sloan. Great, thank you. And before we get started with the presentation, if I can have everybody on the phone line, you can make sure to mute their line. Just so that you don't pick up the background noise. That would be terrific.
All right, let's go ahead and get started. So we have two action items today, going back through and approving the judicial workload case weight, and then going back through and approving the assessed judge need that report that goes to the legislature. So we'll begin with action item one. At the May 29 meeting, this committee met to approve a set of case weights. Those were presented to the council at their directive, and then we were asked to perform additional analysis. And I just want to review quickly where we ended after that May meeting. So this committee approved the use of a median to determine the set of case weights
for most case types, we selected a median. We felt it gave a voice to all the courts as opposed to using an overall average, which would tend to weight it towards the larger courts. And then during the that meeting, there was a recommendation to pull out complex civil separately to do an overall average because the large courts tend to carry that workload. We felt that that was the appropriate use of that to use the overall average for complex civil. So that was where we ended up last time, using a median, a single set of case weights, and then doing complex civil with the overall average. And again, this is just as review. These were the case weights. They're also in a in your materials if you can't read it on the slide. But these were the case weights that were approved and were taken to the council at the time. And again, that complex civil is reflected here from that adjustment we made during the meeting. And then this is just a summary of that output data based on those case weights. The total judge needs there on the left, that's 2103, and that assessed judge need, which is just those judges, that number of judges on the positive side in terms of need statewide. And then on the right is the prioritization ranking that is generated based on those case weights. And it's the 20, if we were to receive 25 judgeships, these are the courts and the numbers that would receive judgeships based on those case weights that were submitted. All right, so that was what we took to the council. And during that meeting, we were asked to address a couple concerns that were raised. And that was, you know, is the model the best fit for all courts, small, medium, and large? Is the model overestimating need? And so those were some of those concerns that we wanted to address going back and looking at that analysis.
Kristen?
Yes.
May I ask a question? Yes, is there a reason that we're worried about it overestimating need and not underestimating need?
I think if the numbers were reversed, I think we would be concerned about underestimating need. And I think some of the models that we ran that we will talk about today might show kind of that disparity in terms of when we're underestimating and overestimating.
Okay.
Yes. So I think
you're talking about this chart that's colored.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. All right. So any other questions before we get started? So before we began, we wanted to kind of have some guiding principles in going in and looking at this data again. So the first thing was space validity. Does the model or the output make sense on its face? The second thing was, is it mathematically sound, and is it also explainable? We have a very large audience. We need to be able to explain it soundly, but we also need to have it relatively simple. And then is it the best fit for the data set? Similar to when we were addressing the median, we want to make sure that with the mix of courts that we have with unique characteristics of all those courts, we need to be mindful of the fit of the model. And then similarly, we have a great sample of small, medium, and large courts, and we have to generate outcomes that make sense for all courts as best we can. And then also one of the things that we looked at was that prioritization and ranking. Does that output make sense? I think we have a sense of courts in need, and so we just want to make sure that when we see that output, it makes sense on its face. And then finally, we want to be able to address the concerns raised by the Judicial Council and make sure those things that we're looking at are addressing those concerns. And I think those are all tied into these principles. Is it the best fit? Does it match the current court environment? And that, those sorts of things. All right. So I think the good news is that we're not starting from scratch. We have a really sound base to re-look at the analysis. We're just taking the data that we have. We have a very sound study, and we have a very rich data set. So as we stated before, we've had 19 courts in the study. We had over 900 judicial officers participate. They gave their time in that time study for 4 weeks, full days, and we had over 98% participation. So I think the work of this committee, the guidance of this committee, the study, the data that we have all approved and acknowledge we just needed to go back and look at the data a little bit more.
Kristen?
Yes.
Were all the clusters kind of equally represented among the 19?
So we had, so if you look at it kind of a statewide breakout of the clusters, it was almost a perfect match in terms of the percentage of ones, the percentage of twos. I think that it's difficult to, there needs to be special attention paid when we had a lot of small courts. And we have to understand what that means when looking at the data. I think Judge Heinrich said this in the WAC call, that we don't want to mask the efficiencies in the larger courts with the small courts, but we had a really good representation of what the state looks like in our study. And how we understand that and work with the data to make sure that it's fully representative of that, I think was the challenge. If that makes sense.
Well, I think I'm going to pull up this slide now. We might have had, we had six cluster one courts. I don't think we had six courts of any.
Yeah, but don't need courts. What percentage of the total judicial officers in the cluster is what we're asking.
Right. But when you're doing a median analysis,
sure,
then it counts because every single court has the same voice, just like in our Senate, every state has.
Sure.
So it is a slightly relevant analysis. Yeah.
And we did have initially had a few more larger court that had to pull out, so that also kind of maybe tips the balance a little bit.
Larger court in cluster one?
In cluster four.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you who the largest part of cluster one was.
Yeah. All right. All right. So in terms of looking at when we wanted to go back and look at different models, we kind of focused our attention on looking at the clusters individually. That seemed to come up a lot, focusing our attention on each of the clusters. Also looking at, again, going back to that median, which is what we used before, but looking at ways that we can adjust for outliers or adjust for that cluster one pull that we're seeing with the higher weight. So those are the three models that we'll present today. You can see a summary of those in attachment B, but we'll go through all of those individually. So the first one is
that is one of the issues, I guess, by doing it is the median, we're giving too much weight to the smaller courts. And I know back in 2011 we did averages.
Yeah.
Is there any thought to just going back to an average instead of the median so you don't have that as an issue? I get that it dwarfs, it makes LA really big and it dwarfs the smaller counties, but it's the thing we had done before, and it would seem to address that issue with small court weights as well.
Yeah, and we did look at that. I think, it just becomes a single, everything is driven by the largest court. And so we still want, it's a balance of wanting to give all those voices. We're going to give the cluster ones, the cluster twos, those courts a voice in the model, and then find a way that we're not tipping the scale one way or the other, large or small. And the average just really tends to pull us. It's just driven by the large court. So that's why we did not use the overall average for the general weight. But yes.
So can I just add, I'm still trying to kind of wrap my mind around what happened at the council meeting. So the question, or I guess the issue that they posed was that smaller courts may have overstated the need because smaller courts are not able to harness the efficiencies that you can have when you have departments that are dedicated to a single case type or to a single kind of proceeding. Is that right? And so the concern was that because we have now gone to a median instead of just a straight average as we did in the – did we do that in the previous study? I'm kind of – forgetting
the
now.
Study was an overall average.
Overall average. So by changing that approach to dealing with the data, the belief is that we are actually overstating how many judges we need.
And Tim, at our last call, one thing I suggested, especially for the two-judge court, I don't see a reason that they need to be necessarily included because they're always going to have
two. They're always going to have two regardless of the workload.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I thank you for including that as an option because it started, I understood what the issue was when we talked briefly, and it just feels like you don't need to include them because they're going to have two no matter what.
Right. Yeah. They sort of, yeah, they actually.
They're driven by statute.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I think when we started the study over a year and a half ago, and I still believe that, you know, we always need to keep those smaller courts.
Of course.
We do analyses. If we see it on trial court budget.
Because they may go to three judges. We can't forget
exactly.
them. We need
right.
to always include them in the measurement, but maybe not in the need unless they flip into the three.
I think that's exactly the point. So, yeah, in hindsight, maybe we would have restructured our sample in a slightly different way,
sure.
But at the time it seemed like in the spirit of inclusivity that we should include some of these small courts, but I would agree that at least three of them will probably never go beyond being two judges, mm-hmm. and even now barely show the need for two, although statutorily we would never cut them below the two.
Right.
Is anybody new in our group that doesn't know that there are some courts that are statutorily obligated or entitled to always have two judges no matter what?
It's a constitutional requirement, right? It's not even a statutory requirement.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's in the Constitution. Every county shall have two judges.
Got it.
Because they only have one case filing, you know, it's still the two judges.
Okay.
Right. All right. So we'll kind of walk you through. This is kind of our thinking in terms of how we went through kind of getting to that last model. So the first model was, and also kind of where we started, looking at those case weights by cluster to really get enough courts that we could look at case weights by cluster.
So, Kristen, I want to say, too, because it might be confusing the way we've laid it out. We've separated them by numbering them 1, 2, and 3. We're not posing them as separate options, but more like the decision path we took to get to a certain point. So, with that in mind,
this is our
first look with this model.
So, and I think you can kind of just see from here, it presented maybe more disadvantages than advantages. We almost highlighted that the pro is that we recognize that variation in the workload between clusters, that extreme variation that we kind of see in those clusters. But what it does is kind of put that emphasis on the small court. So you might not see an overall need that's great, but in those small courts, even though it's one or two judges, that's great for those courts. They might not need a full judge, so you don't see it in the overall number. We also looked at the prioritization as one of those guiding principles that we looked at, and the prioritization was possibly outside of expected range as well, in that a lot of those 25 judges were going to the smaller courts, and maybe that didn't make sense. Huge variation in the case weights, which could produce some difficulty in explaining those variations. So that was some of the kind of highlight of the pros and cons. This is just a summary of that data based on the four cluster average. And again, we didn't use a median here because once we broke out the clusters, we didn't have enough data to do a median. To do a median, you need a larger set so you can get to that middle value. So we used an average when we calculated these weights. So again, it's showing that single number, but it was four sets of case weights for each of the clusters for each of the case types. So again, the assessed judge need 1,898, a reasonable number, maybe a little low, but what's happening is you're getting a lot of those numbers, those increase in judges in the smallest court. So the overall number isn't showing, but when you look at the individual courts, you start to see maybe you wouldn't expect.
I think the real issue for us on the model was trying to explain the variation in the weights between clusters. So it wasn't always the weights weren't always moving in the same direction, for example, very big in the small and the large food. In some cases, the direction was reversed.
So we don't, the way we collect study data to articulate why there are differences from one cluster to the other. So it felt there wasn't information for us to feel like we could explain why the model was working, what this would be an acceptable path to take. Any on that, that four cluster model? All right, so the next place we went was just kind of going, we did feel strongly that the median was a good place that we wanted to go. We really did, we do want to make sure that all the courts have a voice. And so we went back to something we had looked at earlier, and that was looking at kind of this mathematical approach to the median, and that's trimming the median, getting rid of those extreme outliers. It's basically using, if when you're looking at an average, many people have heard of the standard deviation. When you're using a median, you're applying what's called the median absolute deviation. So it's just applying this mathematical formula to get rid of all the outliers. So it's not focused on the small cords. It's gonna take data out of all the cords in the study in terms of where they are in terms of outliers. So the output, I think when we look at the output, we can just go, the output has face validity. It makes sense. In range of what we would expect in terms of need, that assessed judge need in range of what we would expect. I think it had a lot of pros. It makes sense. The issue arises when we have to explain a mathematical formula. I have a statistics background. I relied on my staff to put it in lay terms how we were getting to this number. So it's just something that we, it could present difficulties, I think, in terms of explaining how we did that. To get at that. So it made sense in a lot of areas. It had a lot of pros. The numbers made sense. The prioritization kind of fell where we would expect it to fall. I think one of those, again, going back to those guiding principles, is it easy to explain, and can we explain it to the public, and can we put it out there and have it make sense? And so that, I think that raised concerns in terms of that model.
Can I ask a question on asbestos?
Yes.
I see in the trimmed model, so in the four cluster model, it was 511 minutes, but in the trimmed model, model two and model three, it jumped up to 553 minutes, and I didn't quite understand that. It's like, you know, we didn't have any variation between the clusters, and, you know, as we know, asbestos cases are basically handled by two courts anyway. So why did that not remain at 511?
Because we used an average instead of a median, so how we calculated it changes that average.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not intuitive.
Yeah. Some of these were using averages and some of these were using median?
In the four-cluster model, we had to use an average. We calculated it based on an average because we didn't have enough data points in each of the clusters to be able to calculate a median. For a median, you need a certain number just to be able to calculate that number. Yeah.
I'd really just recommend that we put that on there, just since everything else to date's been done as medians, and it makes very good sense if you've got two counties doing a median. Doesn't make it's impossible. So
yeah, an average.
Yeah, it's just an average, but I think that would be very helpful to know that. It's,
thank you. Yeah, I agree.
Well, the slide is titled "Four Cluster Average," so maybe we can.
Right, just to
put it on the sheet.
Footnote it on the sheet. Yeah,
thank you. Okay. So then that brought us to a third model that we looked at, and I think that was something that was discussed in the WAC call that came up. Sherry mentioned it. And that is
the concern of the cluster one courts and looking at the model without the cluster one courts. I think we shied away from doing that, and these are courts that we have six cluster one courts that participated in the study. We want to be respectful of their time, respectful of the data that they gave us and the time that they put in to do that. So I think we kept shying away. It was a dilemma that we kept working through throughout from the beginning, I think, when we were looking at the data, that the cluster one presents a lot of variation to the model. They just don't have a lot of data, so it can swing when they have a huge case or a certain number of fines. It can just swing from different extremes. So what this model does is pull out all those cluster one courts. Those are those two-judge courts, pulls them out of the model. It pulls them out of the calculation of the case weights. It's not going to pull them out of the model. We will still monitor them, watch them. There are courts in that cluster one that are starting to get above and over that two-judge need. But what this does is just takes them out of the calculation for the case weight. And this just kind of talks a little bit about why we might do that. So in the workload study, they tend to, not in all cases, but they tend to inflate that need. As was pointed out earlier, those smallest courts will always have the two judicial officers, and we will always monitor. We're not pulling them out of the model. We will always monitor their need. They just wouldn't be part of that caseload calculation.
Let me explain a little bit, because I don't want to suggest, and I wrote the first bullet, so I don't want to suggest that they're somehow inflating the need is can have a negative connotation, but we limit ourselves to a 4-week data collection period because it's just enough to give us the full range of activities, but we don't want to be overly burdensome. So ideally, in a small court, a cluster one court, we would be collecting data over a longer period of time, maybe 8 weeks, 12 weeks, to really get the full range of activities. In a 4-week study, we get something close, but if in cluster one, you can have one felony matter that just blows the workload out of, I guess, what would be the normal range of activities. And so because of that limitation, any sort of value that we collect from cluster one court over a 4-week period of time could have the impact of showing a higher need for particular case type than what we would normally see over the course of a full year. So it's somewhat just a condition of how we study.
Okay, that's a good question.
Sure.
In model two, we're rejecting the outliers anyway.
Right.
Would that be rejected in model two anyway?
So it would. It
yeah.
would. And I think the hesitation that we had with model two was that it was, the pattern is not consistent across all the case types. So it has some compelling, you know, it is limiting or trimming the data, but if we were to have to list out the court and case types that were cut out, then the pattern is not, it's not uniform across all the different case types. But yeah, I think what you're saying is would it trim out those outliers from cluster one?
So let's look at the output. So I think this also kind of was a compelling reason. The output is very similar to that trimmed median model. If we so we have that assessed judge need at 1,976 DST, the overall need at 1,976, the assessed judge need at 173. And if we look at this trimmed median, they're very similar. So we ended up kind of in a similar place. And then the prioritization is exactly the same when we pull out those cluster one courts from the calculation of the case weight. So
can you go back to the cons on the trimmed median again?
Mm-hmm.
That's the I meant the trimmed median.
Oh,
sorry. And you think it's more challenging to explain because why?
Getting rid of the outliers is not difficult to explain. It's just that the approach is that we're using a median absolute deviation, so it's just a mathematical formula. that runs on the model to pull out those outliers.
Right, but that's not that hard to explain for anyone who understands how it works, right?
Correct. It might be to a larger audience, but...
So, if you use ice skating and judging, take out the time flow.
Yes.
Did you say ice skating?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, if you want a simplistic metaphor, I would do it.
So the Russian judges tend to...
constitutional requirement that every court have two judges in some ways just makes moot the data that they would contribute to this particular exercise. It doesn't in any way diminish the importance of their work or anything else, but it certainly does not make them a critical component of the arithmetic exercise that we're trying to go through in order to determine.
Yeah, that was the argument I had on the phone when I suggested to eliminate. I just want to point out that it is a little, we're kind of speaking out of both sides of our mouth because we're saying trimmed means we're excluding outliers but not including them or reducing the size of the median anyway. So we have to just admit that because that's what we're doing.
I guess the issue is they're not going to get any of the new judges.
They're not,
because they're only entitled to two unless their workload goes and including them in the case
yep.
of like in
the
test.
Yeah,
that's the position that we're not taking.
Yep.
That's either
way to say it.
And I think it's a fair way to present the I think the stakeholders that we're going to have to, you don't have to end up sitting there with the discussion of this is why we got. Let us show you the scatter plot. This is why we think this outlier was appropriate to eliminate. And then when we're getting to the legislators that we know we look for a scatter plot, that we can do the explanation. I think Turner did a really great job of it. We're not including these because they're not required to have those judges.
I'm cautious about that. I mean, because they're small and they're couched. Judges, does that mean their data is less than?
No,
exactly. That's my point for pulling them out altogether in the explanation because they get anyway. But that doesn't mean their data is.
Right, but if they have 0.8 amount of workload.
And they're going to get two judges
and
anyway.
They're going to have two judges, I think, looking at how many minutes they may have spent on their one misdemeanor case that they had that day. I'm not saying they're not spending the hours in the courtroom and their staff's not spending the time, but they have that time because they don't actually have two judges for the work.
But they don't get two judges in the form of use data of their workload in determining what kind of overall you have.
I think there's some psychology to it, though, Judge.
Yeah.
You know, think
right.
about, you know, you're sitting in a busy misdemeanor calendar in Orange County,
right.
You can see the sea of folks that are out in the galley waiting, you know, to get their cases heard. If you're in, pick one, Alpine County, where they're, you know, their county population is something like 1,800 people in the entire county, and they have two judges, they have workload for, I don't know what their current workload is, actually, is it 0.4 FTE, something like that. They have the luxury of really, you know, moving through this thing at a much more
thorough
and, you know, and I think the data demonstrate that that's in fact what's happening. You know, the fact that, they're spending 271 minutes on a parentage case, where in LA they're spending 94 minutes on that case. So they are able. They just have the luxury of time that most courts do not have, or that, you know, and water finds its own level. You know, I mean, we all know that if you are in a hurry, then you figure out a way to move efficiently and quickly, and you group things differently. You move things around on your calendar. All the PD misdemeanors are going to go in one group, and all the private counsels are going to be in another group. If you only have three cases on the calendar, you know, there's no urgency to do the work in a different and perhaps, you know,
I understand.
Breakneck.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Has anybody done an analysis of how much more all courts would be in terms of time?
Well, that was just the example, 271 minutes on a heritage case on that,
yeah.
91 in LA.
That's one example.
They demonstrate that in the cluster one courts, they do have the luxury of spending a lot more time per case.
I think what we do lack right now is we don't have a level of data available to us statewide that would show us, in the large courts, that matter takes four hearings, and in the small court, it takes six, for example, for the length of the hearing. be on the basis of sort of anecdotal information that we would get.
Well, I just wanted to point that out. I didn't mean us to go down a hole because I still think that it's probably the right approach. That's why, you know, I agree. But I do want us to understand that there will be those that see this as kind of a, it's somewhat of the same process. And we have to just recognize that. But I would like to ask another question. On the, I can't believe I didn't see this before. Are those just 1058 cases? Why are we including them in a judicial needs assessment since those are grant funded? Because when I look at the cluster four in particular, I think what's driving that is of the cluster four, I think LA was the primary driver. And we only spend what the grant gives us.
Yep.
We have four commissioners. We probably should have six, four, seven. But because we haven't equalized funding in that area like we should have several years ago.
We're trying.
We're not there. That's probably an unfair measurement, and it's grant funded, and they're not judge work. It's commissioner work because it's 1058. So I wonder.
Does this also include child support matters that are heard?
That's why I asked.
Yeah.
Just 1058.
Yeah. If it's just 1058, then you're right. It shouldn't be in the study.
Well, it's still expressed in our authorized judicial. So if you know, if you look at the list of authorized positions, I don't think we have it in the materials, but.
I know it is. I'm just kind of questioning it a little bit because I don't know if any court they use judges for 1058 because you can, but you can't charge the grant against it. So if you choose to do it, you're doing it out of your hype. So, you know, especially in the sense that we haven't equalized funding in this area yet. Those courts that are significantly underjudged in that particular area because of grant restrictions. It's going to severely, that is the reason cluster four is so small, because I'll bet LA is driving that, and that's not right.
So why don't we bring something back at our next meeting to show that information?
Yeah.
I feel like
separate issue.
Yeah.
No, but it's important. But it is an important issue.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah.
And just to follow up, so I must confess that I had read that to be both the 1058 and when you get the parents coming in arguing about just child support, that goes in. That can, or because it's a child custody case and it's then each custody and the next motion is of course child support. Would a child support motion heard in a family law court that's not the 1058 included numbers?
So we'll bring the definitions that are next.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'm okay,
sure. Because if it is just 1058, we got to.
Yeah,
I agree.
But I agree also, they come in and out.
Uh-huh.
But 1058.
So that's why they need to figure out what they measure.
Uh-huh.
Because if they just measure 1058, why would it be part of the judicial need? Because it's commissioner work.
Right,
and
the commissioners were not
right.
And
it's restricted by grant funding.
Uh-huh.
And we haven't equalized that yet.
Right.
But you know, we do on the workload side.
I understand.
Take things out. But that's not what we're
it would be included on the workload side, on the staff side.
Right?
I know we pull it out.
So we don't pull it out for the child support staff, because those are all court funded. We don't pull it. Only the commissioner.
I'm looking at the financial sheets. You're looking at the workload sheet. So I guess it depends on which one. We pull it out of the funding sheet.
It's a 2020 issue.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
it is.
So we wouldn't be looking at 1058 being different just because they're commissioner work, but because it's grant funded.
But it's not 100% grant funded, right?
Well, and the commissioners were not part of the judicial workload study, right? We didn't.
They are. Yeah.
Oh, they
yeah,
are.
Yeah,
oh, that's right. They are.
Because that gets to my point.
I get
that.
Then you
look
at
traffic.
What I'm saying is, when you measure, just like in the large courts have luxury, if you are restricted by the amount of money because we have not equalized the funding in that area yet, if LA is driving cluster four, which it is, how many of the, what percentage of cluster four would LA represent? It's a huge number. Because I know that we're stuck at four and our workload justifies at least six, maybe seven, but we're stuck at four. They are pushing that stuff through so fast, and that's what you're measuring. And that's not right. So So I think we need to look at it. It doesn't necessarily need to be right now, but and it's not directly related to whether we take in or out cluster one, but I do think we need to look at it at some point.
We'll come back with both the information on the judicial side and also the staff side. We measure it in rounds.
Yeah, but I don't think they're necessarily related, but yeah.
No.
But, yeah. And the difference is that on the staff side, we allow three-year averages and they fluctuate. Judgeship numbers are more difficult when they fluctuate because you can't, it's very difficult, unlike the federal model, where they have temporary judgeships that either convert to permanent or not, here it's very difficult to adjust the numbers once they're set. So I think it's important that we recognize that too.
There's no, I have one more proposal to the committee. Is there no more questions on the work on the model?
Can I ask one more dumb question?
Yes.
No, so the work year value, $77,400. So I know that we recently went through a change in the work year value on the RAS side. So, and I don't have that data in front of me. So this $77,000 is different than what we determined would be the work year value on the RAS side. Is that right?
In court workload.
It's just case processing time workload.
Case processing time workload. Yeah, I can't remember what the variables were that went into the 77,000.
Six hours
a day,
yep.
5 days a week,
yeah.
And accounted for time off, vacation time, you know, hold out,
yeah,
holidays,
hold out
and all that stuff.
Yeah. We can get you that sheet if we
yeah, it's been a long time since I've looked.
Yeah.
Wanted to make sure that our, you know, sort of our foundational, you know, integer isn't the wrong integer.
Similar to what we do with the RAS, you know, we confirm that that time kind of matches what we see in the time study data.
Okay,
so
good.
We need to recommend that that year value, and it matches what we saw.
Okay, good. All right, thank you.
Any other questions on the model? So as we were digging through the data and kind of reassessing the data, we set aside complex and calculated it a little bit differently. When we were going back through the data, one of the things that popped out was that unlimited civil, although not as maybe as extreme in terms of complex, in terms of just that the large courts hold that data, unlimited civil ranks up there in its percent of time and filing in the large courts. And since complex civil is a subset of unlimited civil, we thought it might be beneficial, it might be best to also run unlimited civil as an average with complex because they are similar to each other in terms of how they are represented in the large court. And that complex is a subset of unlimited and that we used to have them together in previous models. So for this model run through, we are recommending that we also do unlimited civil similar to complex and do an app.
That's not.
It is run that way in the model.
So for models.
For the cluster one model, the no cluster one model. It has that run that way. It has the unlimited civil run as an average. And we can.
So I think we used to have an asterisk in this table, and then we'll put it back into Excel.
Right,
we used to have all the asterisks.
Yes. Yeah.
We'll put it back in.
But that's something for the. Yeah.
So in model one and model two, they're medians, and then model three, it's an average?
Yeah.
Model
one is average anyways.
Model one is on average anyway. So model two is actually the median.
Yeah.
Model three
and
is the median except for civil and complex.
And model two, it ended up being the same thing so we didn't change it because the outliers were pulled out and it ended up being similar. But when we were looking at it, when we were looking at kind of all the case types and the percentage of filings in time, it was up there with the complex civil in terms of the large courts, and the reason we made that change to the complex was because the large courts hold the majority of that workload.
I mean, that makes sense. That's the reason I would support the difference. I mean, yeah, we have to find a methodology that not only is defendable, but makes common sense,
yeah.
Too. Yeah.
Taking a position, I'm just trying to think out loud. So if we've got one data point in our model that's average,
two. They're both double, complex
and unlimited. So we've got two that are averages, everything else is a median. Would the model look a lot different if everything was an average? I'm just trying to think of how you're going forward and explaining. We are using median for some stuff. We're using average for the one thing that kicks it out.
No, I think it's because it's the same reason as complex and for asbestos, that there's fewer courts that are driving it. So it makes sense to use an average because you don't have enough that you're going to
calculate the median.
So
as
complex, asbestos, and unlimited civil are all averages because the number of courts.
And I hope we can add footnotes, whatever
yeah,
we
yeah,
will, because
yeah,
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 I think
that
will help.
Because there's only two courts that do asbestos.
Right.
So that makes
and
sense.
And
fewer with
complex.
Only LA does complex
like,
civil.
Yeah.
San Diego has complex civil, but we don't have very many cases.
Yeah. There's really a few courts that get that.
There's some, not like LA.
But everyone does unlimited civil.
Right, but unlimited civil is different in some of the larger counties. It's, you know, Qualcomm suing Apple, and that's a huge case, even if they don't dedicate it as complex, it's supposed to happen.
Or in our court, we don't have enough judges, so we don't declare it complex,
right.
Even if it is complex.
Right.
Well, so in terms of the filings, too, remember that complex, we have to create an artificial way of counting those cases by using key data. So the filings themselves are part of unlimited civil. Then we use the fees assessed against the plaintiff and the total amount collected from plaintiffs as a proxy to figure out a number of matters. Because they're coming out of the same filing pool, it made sense that we take the same approach.
That's actually a really good point because that, I think, eliminates the concern about the ones that don't pay. And it also, I have, you know, serious concerns about a lot of the issues in terms of how the credit falls because of using the complex fee, which we haven't really, well, addressed it at some point, not right now, but it really doesn't count them accurately. So I think using an average for all of those weighted reasons makes a lot of sense.
What would the number be if it were a median for unlimited civil?
95.
We pretty much have four counties that do complex.
Four or five
counties that do complex.
Yeah. And even fewer that do JCC consolidated. Really just a couple.
Okay. And this also captures the case types you were talking about, Judge Rockwell, in Sacramento, right?
Yeah.
That aren't designated as complex because the AG doesn't have, whoever doesn't have state.
There's
violence.
No fee.
Right. But those complex cases that aren't technically complex, you know, be part of this.
And all of the JCC consolidated.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a problem.
So. I think if we asterisk and explain, would expect we may get pushback on unlimited civil just because every county does do them. I do think it helps, selfishly it does help the county I'm from, just because we do have so many of the folks that if they were private actors, they would be complex cases, but because we only count by fees actually paid regardless of whether or not it's otherwise a complex case.
Yeah.
Those cases that are handled by our complex judges don't get counted.
Yeah,
I think we mentioned it was, we don't have, short of going to those courts every year and doing it on our list, we don't have a mechanical way of collecting those.
What would our total need be if we did an average? So if we did like model three, but did it as an average, does it, do the numbers shift a lot? And I'm largely just asking because those are pretty, as you scan down that column, those are big numbers. I get that they're not the big, they're not the frequent cases, but if you look at the minutes, those are the big numbers. Does it shift much if we go back to the average of the 2011, since we're doing those three as it does? Okay.
The whole, the entire model as an average? Very, yeah.
I think, you know, the point is, the point is well taken that, you know, we're all sitting around, we're spending hours looking at these data points and we're all on the committee and we're all kind of wonky people anyway, but explaining, oh, we're going to take the median for everything except these three case types and we're going to asterisk this one because it's only done in two courts and we're going to asterisk this other one because it's only done in one court. And, you know, I think it complicates and makes the model very noisy. And I think that's one of the challenges is to have a model that is defensible without being so noisy. Because I think then it does, I think, make the perception that we're somehow monkeying around with the data. So I'm a big fan of simplicity. And if we're going to have places where we step away from this is our theoretical approach, except in these case types, we have to be able to really explain why those three case types are different.
And I completely agree with the comment that I made the other day. For example, why then are we not looking at family law? It's more complex in Los Angeles County to get a divorce if you're a famous person than it is to get a divorce if you, you know, there are all sorts of things that can be more complex in the bigger cities where there's more assets to be applied, et cetera, whether you're a family law, you're a fighting part of the child custody case. So I understand the concern, and that's why we wanted to not just have this over the telephone, have everybody go to UK and say, come up with what we can defend so that when I take it back to the council, they'll accept it.
So I think the white paper that goes along with whatever we end up with has got to have really a lot of really descriptive information about our thinking. Thinking is what's going to help.
So Grant, I think I agree with the approach moving forward here. We've got a couple of things that we want to slice and dice a little bit more and come back with that. As far as I'm concerned, those are appropriate areas to look at and be interested.
Are folks okay with using the median or the average on the civil complex and unlimited and excessive?
Yes.
Yeah, because yeah, I think there are real reasons
just
to do that. Yeah.
Yes.
But no. So I want to read what Judge Heinrich, our new presiding judge of all presiding judges, got elected last week. And so she won't be able to be on this committee. That's the downside of that. But couldn't be here because her daughter. I reviewed the materials and think that the being present for the discussion would be critical to any ultimate decision. That being said, I appreciate all the work of staff and at this juncture feel like Model 3 may be the best plan. I think that if Cluster 1 courts feel left out with this conclusion that they shouldn't, their participation is important for a number of different reasons, including how other resources besides some additional judges may assist them to better administer justice. For example, why is civil and family matters taking so much more judicial time? My speculation is they do not have any research attorneys to assist them, so they have to do it all themselves. If that is the case, then perhaps other solutions could be found to reduce the pressure on those judges. I'm sorry, I can't do that. Those are our only other comments.
Yeah, and you know, we definitely aim and learn a lot from our site visits to the court. Qualitative data does inform our work. So, you know, there are several places in the model where we consider the needs of our court, namely in the prioritization model, which we talked about a little bit more, and I think that our default as a committee has always been to be sensitive to those.
My concern is that small courts will want to pay in the future because they'll say our data is not important, and that's one of the things we need to stress very clearly, that we need the smaller court so that we can see if they need to go to a three-judge court rather than the Constitution mandated two.
And maybe the idea would be to, as Leah suggested, is to not put them into the judicial workload study as we have it currently constituted, but to say we will have a special small judge court judicial workload study, and we'll do it for 4 months or 6 months or whatever gives you like all the case types and all the vagaries of, you know, what happens in a court when you have real swings in the workload.
Well, the standard deviation is so large. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So don't you know, limit them to just giving you 30 days of data, but have them actually provide 120 days of data, which would give you, you know, perhaps all the case types where you may not have captured all the case types for every, you know, small court in this study.
And I think that's a really good point. Yeah, I think there's something interested in coming up with a way to look at this data differently as we go forward and we fine-tune the model.
Yeah.
And try to figure out how we can best represent our numbers to the Department of Finance, a proposal like that. I think they're also us meeting more often. So if these numbers are not, you can't have a conference call to talk about this. It just doesn't work.
So I think Judge Heinrich's letter brought up some things that we kind of missed in our previous discussion. That was the idea that you got available time, that you can, if you were casing, you spend more time. But, you know, they don't have family court services doing mediation. For example, on that, you know, I mean, it's logical if you got a lighter calendar, you get, but they also don't have a lot of the resources that we have.
That makes sense.
But that would, yeah, so.
And
she's been such a, you know, great advocate for the small courts. I think it, you know, her point that if, whether the small courts are included or not in the actual counting here, they're still an important part of the study.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I she said that, I carry a lot of weight.
Sure, I agree. I mean, maybe we need a longer study, but I feel very uncomfortable excluding them the day when it's all. Of course, because as you indicated, they don't have the support of the book. They have the new research staff. They don't have mediation. They don't have all these other types of support. That's going to make their decision easier.
But that's an argument for why they should be separate.
Yeah.
I think
they're different.
Point. So I doesn't mean that their judicial need is higher. Maybe their workload staff need is higher. They need more research attorneys to help them get through their calendars. But if they don't have, it doesn't mean that they need more judges.
Yeah.
And that's the overall resource. Right.
Well, I guess if you're not as efficient as larger courts, I think you might need.
Are you looking for a motion for action one?
I am.
I would move that we have Model 3, but include the average for complex, unlimited, civil, and SF.
I would second.
All right. Friendly amendments or anything that anyone wants to? What do you think we're going to have? I do hear why we're doing the average for unlimited civil. I can see that being a more difficult explanation at the Department of Finance. So is it your friendly amendment that we present to the council both options?
No, I think I don't see a better alternative. I just see it as a concern that we really, I think, remedy to be prepped to go in with the explanation of why it makes sense to take a case type that is present across the state and do it as an average as opposed to a median like we're doing with every other case type. So I'm hearing that there's good basis for that.
I have a friendly amendment. So in the EDD case type, although it's a very negligible number, it is, I think, only done by Sacramento. Is that right? Is that the only court that's doing EDD filings? So maybe that should be average also. If we're going to say, you know, for case types where there's only one or two courts doing that thing, why wouldn't we also say that we're going to use the average for EDD? Because then it looks like our methodology.
Because I meant to do an average. You know, it's we only get the data from Sacramento.
So that would be the average of one, Kim.
All right. But I mean, we should say that this is an average number, it's not a median number. Unlimited civil, but then there are the howlers, you know.
Yep. The motion is then to have a friendly amendment. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Don't I have to agree to
yes,
the amendment?
You
have to agree
to the friendly amendment. Agree with me, Sherry?
I guess I do.
Oh, thank you.
Well, it's cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any other discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passed.
Is it lunchtime?
Yeah.
Kidding.
You got a short meeting.
Yeah, I love it. Let's do the second.
This
yeah.
one is quick. So this we just.
I didn't know how long it would take.
No, this is important.
We needed to talk about it. Yeah. All right. So for action item two, we 2019 judicial needs assessment and prioritization. We have to resubmit the judgeship needs biennial report. We submitted a 2018 model as a preliminary report that we will resubmit with updated case weights and updated filing. We had submitted it as a preliminary report knowing we were in the midst of doing this study. So when we get approval of new case weights, we will resubmit that. It will then generate that prioritization model that we showed earlier. We will have updated filing that will reflect 2015-16 up through 2017-18.
So will you be sending it to us kind of FYI when you send it to the council or how I'd love to see it?
Okay.
Because we get calls from people who know we're on this committee and I just don't want to get blindsided if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, now that we have the weight,
you can apply and send it.
Yeah, okay.
The other thing I would recommend in that,
mm-hmm.
and if this isn't, that's not the right document, then maybe somewhere else. I know we've been in a series of major legislative changes from back from realignment, and now we're facing the bail reform and
Prop 66,
and all of these other cases. I think it's very important that we put up front and center, that the continuing changes are going and likely to increase the judicial workload. Because if you're bringing all of that in to the courts, as opposed to it being, all of those things are going to be driving workload. And it's not here yet. It's certainly, bail reform is not going to impact 17-18, but all of the things that are happening in 18-19 and going forward are going to, so we don't want people to be shocked if we come back in a couple of years and say, yeah, I need to come up.
I have a document that I can send you, I think I have before, where I've had my office track all of the judicial workload impact that were not measured. And I'll ask, I know Brian's listening right now. Brian, update the document and send it to Leah. How's that? And Kristen. Because and there will continue to be a lot, especially on criminal post-judgment. There's a lot of work going on that I'm not sure has even been measured in the latest measurement. So I think that we need to include that, a document similar to that, especially the things that have not been measured. The marijuana resentencing is going to be huge for a while, you know, just stuff like that. So, okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for
Would you send that to
all of us?
To all of us,
Well, their document, you don't have to give my document because they'll make it pretty, right? Okay, Brian. Yeah, sure.
Thanks, Brian.
He said you're welcome.
We have adopted and approved this one, so the second one,
and R. Needed case rate for the viewing. That you
know, I think it's automatic.
Yeah.
Okay.
So do we need to do we need a motion on that one?
No.
Okay.
Like,
right. It's just yeah.
And the
it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So next, what are we doing next? Not today, but.
So the next steps are to go to the council. So we will any follow up that we have from this meeting, we will get out. To the committee, but we will take the recommendation to the September 23rd, 24th, I don't know what day we'll be on yet, for that meeting, and then, as we stated, we'll resubmit that judicial needs report with the new model parameters and updated filings.
Does it change the judicial, of the 25 new judgeships, does it change the order of what we just did and you need us to make a motion or anything?
We didn't make a motion last time.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it falls for a fall.
It falls for a fall.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. It shouldn't be about individual courts. Yeah, I've got it.
So I have two action items that we will take kind of on our to-do list. Number one, when we have our next meeting, we will schedule a meeting. Let's get to the council before we talk about we're going to come back and have a fuller discussion about 80-10-58, what we measure, taking a look carefully at the judicial side, having to do the way how we assess judicial need and how we report the authorized positions that are related to the 80-10-58 funding. Longer term, we will continue to contemplate and refine the way that we study the small court. I think we will, so the last time we made a motion on this, it's been several years now, but we are to come back and refresh the study approximately every 5 years to account for change in workload. And there's been discussion whether or not we should be considering studying these courts on a shorter turnaround time frame for all the reasons that Judge Rockwell mentioned before.
And so, yeah, I can expect Liz, that will come. That will come from E&T or from Robert, you know,
sure.
That they're going to be recommending that we change this.
Yep.
Because it's too important to have it be current.
Yeah. And so we also share the need. We have it produced and we are preparing to send E&T for the same time and then Sherry is out for Ryan.
Well, he'll send it to you, and then you can distribute it. How's that?
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, for your consideration, Chairwoman, if it feels as if we do need to do more work around how to identify complex civil cases, and if you ever felt that you wanted a group of CEOs to work on that, I'm happy to take the lead on that, because really what it is we need to find a way to identify them and put them in a system. And if there needs to be a way where we can do a better job with that, not only for the Sacramento problem, but also for those that have JCC consolidated cases. And when we're looking at where the fee is paid, they're paid in the court that originally got them, but then when they're transferred, you know, they're very complex. And I would be more than happy to work with a group of CEOs, since it's really more about tagging them in the case management system to identify them. Filing somehow.
Isn't that a CX chair?
It is, but
you know the CX chair, right?
I do. Well, he's coming out in. Thank God for that. Oh no, I'm kidding. By on the phone. But it just feels like it is something that belongs with you. Kind of saying yes, that's something that people should look at. But it feels like we do, because we've been struggling with this for a long time.
But aren't you guys currently updating your system?
We are.
And we didn't come up with a new way to count.
We didn't talk about it.
Because
I'm on the GIPS group. So
it sounds like a GIPS group issue.
Okay.
I would support GIPS that is coming from a biased perspective as well, but I think we've got the better understanding of how it might work in with other things and how we're counting the unlimited civil.
I think
I
I know Sacramento would be happy to put whatever resources we could to also assisting in that. I mean, we get our fair share of the JCC consolidated as well as just the issues on the complex and figuring out a better way to look at those. They're so different than a regular case.
So anyway, if you feel that that's one here, I'm happy to help. It kind of is in the weeds, which I think CEOs need to do and then recommend it somewhere. But
we talked to the SEAC chair and the incoming SEAC chair.
Yeah. Or hurry and talk to the outgoing.
That's what I mean. I'm going to be outgoing and the incoming.
Which is her CEO.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
This is my favorite.